Thank you. We are going to take items slightly out of order to accommodate one of our very hardworking committee members, Mr. Carlson, who's here to present on the redesign. So we will be starting with item number 21. Madam Clerk, please read the item.
From the Director, Department of Health and Human Services, submitting an informational report on the current activities of the Mental Health Redesign and Implementation Task Force. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Director Cologne.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. I just want to first off start by thanking both Sue Gottich and Pete Carlson for their leadership as co-chairs of the Redesign Mental Health Committee. They've done a great job in moving us forward, in particular with our movement with our SMART goals. So thank you very much. I also want to thank the co-chairs that have been involved with Redesign, advocates, providers, policymakers, Madam Chair, and Supervisor Stamper for your involvement in this effort. There's a lot to be proud of. You'll hear some great movement and results over the last couple of years in particular. There's more that needs to be done, and we really look forward to working with all the partners to make sure we move this system forward. That's a person-centered, recovery-oriented approach to serve the people that we serve here in Milwaukee County.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for accommodating my schedule. I really appreciate that. Today you're going to hear some, I think, really positive information about the work that's been accomplished over the last several, couple of years at least. I wanted to, and I think just our task force really wanted to share with you all the just sort of the complexity of what it is we're dealing with. And I know that, you know, it sometimes seems like things are fairly simple, but in reality this is a very complex thing, and I probably spend way too much time thinking about this, but you know, I think about things that involve so many different aspects of our society and how these things all come together. You know, we're talking about law enforcement, government, judicial, public-private providers. You know, long-term, with respect to the BHD, long-term care versus acute care, how reimbursement works. You know, a patient isn't a patient isn't a patient, a bed isn't a bed isn't a bed. It's complicated. There are a lot of moving parts. I was thinking about, you know, what is an analogy of, you know, sort of that would describe this. And the analogy that I came up with was sort of driving in downtown today. You know, it's like driving an old car that needs repairs, and you're doing the repairs while you're driving. Mm. And at the same time, the traffic laws are changing, and you're needing to adjust to that. And at the same time, you're working on all the repairs with a bunch of volunteer mechanics. They're good mechanics. They're dedicated, but they're volunteering. Behavioral health is cyclical. So you got construction season. There are sometimes when there's a lot of construction, sometimes when there's not quite so much. But you got to deal with all of that. There are other changes that are coming along. Now you got to go around roundabouts. You know, so you have to learn all these various things, all these moving parts that are going on at the same time. And it feels like the work that we're doing is that. And so when you hear the results that we're talking about today, you know, I think there's something to be really proud of, and I think we've made a tremendous amount of progress over the last couple of years. The other thing that I would comment on is that, you know, the task force started 2 years ago when the county executive appointed the task force. But in reality, this goes back to probably the crisis point in 2007, when we had police cars backed up at PCS. We had patients, psychiatric patients, being boarded in all the local emergency departments, you know, sometimes for more than 24 hours at a time. You know, that's when, in my opinion, and I've been doing this in Milwaukee County for over 20 years, that's when we truly began to partner the private hospitals and the BHD. And I think what we've seen since then, and the data that you're going to see, shows a tremendous improvement in the system. Now, are we there? Absolutely not. We've got a long ways to go yet. But we've come a long ways, and so this is a very, you know, I think we're proud to present the data that we have to present to you. Before I turn it over to Sue, I just want to thank all of the members of the task force. They have done just an absolutely fantastic job. People have contributed of their own time, their own energy and their own ideas, and I think that the progress that we've made, we owe a tremendous amount of thanks to them. So thank you for the opportunity to make these comments, and I will now turn it over to Sue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Supervisors, I too can only echo what Pete has said about the members of the task force and their dedication and work towards the achievement of the goals, and I especially want to thank Madam Chair and Supervisor Stanford for your participation. It's critical, your involvement in this task force as well. I just wanted to briefly walk through some of the items that are on the board report. The board report is laid out where there is supplemental information to help kind of clarify where some of the progress has been made. The goals, the SMART goals, were approved by the County Board of Supervisors in March, and this information and this data is a six-month point-in-time capture of goals that have been completed by the task force over that six-month period of time. But the one thing that I wanted to also point out is that when the task force was first formed, it was based on a lot of the recommendations from an external agency called HSRI, or the Human Service Research Institute. We have never lost focus of the recommendations that HSRI has made in regards to the redesign of the mental health system in Milwaukee County. So you have a separate attachment of goals that have been accomplished based on the recommendations from HSRI that were published in February of 2012. Just as an example of some of the goals and how they connect with the SMART goals and the HSRI recommendation is SMART goal number 4. And all of the goals have basically made recommendations that we increase the use of peers as providers. I am proud to present that Milwaukee County has the highest number of certified peer specialists in the entire state. We have 81 certified peer specialists in Milwaukee County, and just over the last year, that is over a 50% increase in the number of certified peer specialists that we have, not only certified, but employed in other entities throughout the county. Now, what we have done through the board report itself is that we have taken the SMART goal and we have matched it up to the HSRI recommendation. So that HSRI recommendation starts at the bottom of page 2, which is recommendation number 6, and talks about promoting a recovery-oriented system through the use of person-centered approaches and peer supports. So not only does it expand on what has been completed within the SMART goal itself, it also identifies other recommendations that were made by HSRI for this county to focus in on the use of peers as providers. So one example is the number of contracted targeted case management organizations that have certified peer specialists on staff, that the Division of Housing currently uses certified peer specialists in their supported housing programs, that we have trained 10 individuals in the use of RAP, or the Wellness Recovery Action Plan, which is a peer-to-peer facilitated wellness plan. And then probably to highlight one community partner, which is OurSpace. And OurSpace employs 25 peer specialists. That is the most of any employment entity in the entire state as far as the number of peer specialists. And last but not least is to recognize Aurora and the hiring of their first peer specialist just last month. As we continue through the progress of the goals, I think one other accomplishment that I would like to highlight is our emphasis on the use of crisis and the crisis plans. And what we have seen is an increase of 157% of the use and the creation of individualized crisis plans that are now on file with PCS of individuals that have gone through psychiatric crisis services. So that information is reflected not only in the SMART goal, but then also, again, is cross-referenced in HSRI recommendation number 4. And probably the thing, so you don't have to keep looking from document to document, is that there is a flyer that was created for you, and that's in front of you right now. And this basically highlights where the progress has been made by the completion of the SMART goals and identifying, as I just did, the first two that are on the top. But what has also been accomplished is a 19% reduction in emergency detentions, a 7% increase in the number of individuals that we are actually able to serve and have served through targeted case management services. We have added the capacity to serve 90 extra individuals over the last year alone. We have had our readmission rate now is down to 19% for acute inpatient. Psychiatric crisis admissions have reduced by 13%. And probably one of the biggest accomplishments as far as a partnership with the Division of Housing is an 80% increase in recovery-oriented supported housing. But I think one thing is that we have talked about what the purpose of redesign is, and that is to reduce the reliance upon inpatient care. And the last goal that is accomplished here and what we've identified is that since a lot of the redesign efforts have occurred, we have reduced our average daily census in acute inpatient by over 41 patients. So back in 2008, our average daily census was 108 individuals, and today it's 67 individuals. So I think the one thing that we want to be able to do on an ongoing basis, yes, Supervisor. The average daily census is basically a count that is done on the number of individuals who are currently being treated at the acute inpatient setting at BHD. And back in 2008, that number was 108 on an average daily basis. And today, it's 67 individuals. So we reduce that by 41 individuals by our ability to build capacity actually within the community through, you know, crisis centers. We've got the respite centers and the stabilization homes and crisis resource center, and then a more robust community service delivery system. I think one of the things that we have also been, you know, targeted with is using data to help drive and inform our decisions. And it is our desire to begin to publish for the board, but then also for this community to see the progress that's being made as far as the goal accomplishments. And it is this a sample of this flyer that will be published to the Mental Health Redesign website on a quarterly basis to provide an update to the data and the accomplishments that the task force has not only been making, but the impact that it has been having on this community in general as well.
Questions? Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to thank the committee and working very hard on SMART goals. My comments is, even though you're talking about the pace that you're going, you have volunteer mechanics, you have roundabouts, you have construction, you have everything else. But your pace is going quite fast, and because if you have all those obstructions, how can you maintain the goals? Second of all, just looking at your goals here, instead of saying that what you have done, you can use the analogy going back to at the bottom of placing people daily average all the way back to 2008. What's the daily average when you just actually start to really trying to downsize? Because if you look at your 2008, you have started downsizing in 2008, which is one of your goals you're looking at. I really think that what you are trying to do is great, but then again, why we have some people want the state to take it over, that Milwaukee County Board of Directors did not stand in your path. We've been very supportive. I have a question for you. In the resign in your committee, how much was this in the budget? How much did they take in this budget that said, look at your recommendations? Since you got your standing committee is working very hard, you have volunteers, people taking out their time, how much of this recommendation was in the resign budget for this past 2014 budget? Can you tell me?
Director Colon will, sure. And I can add some information as well.
Supervisor Mayo, there are, you know, the budget that we submitted had a lot of redesign efforts in it, most of which did get passed by the board. There was, we wanted to private.
Tell me, don't say it was sure. In there. I would like to know. That's why I asked the question.
Sure.
No over. Excuse me. Pardon me for interrupting you, Madam Chair. I would like to know exactly
specifically what initiatives were suggested by the redesign committee.
I can identify some of those. Probably one of the first ones, and that's also reflected in the HSRI report, was moving the community support programs to an ACT IDDT model, and that is something that is occurring right now. Another ACT is assertive community treatment. And it's partnered with another evidence-based program called IDDT, which is Integrated Dual Disorder Treatment. Those are evidence-based programs basically to, you know, create a hospital without walls and promote recovery for individuals throughout the community to actually have a recommendation and a mindset that the individuals that we serve are so much more than their disease. So that's one recommendation that was in, and that's a significant and substantial budget initiative. Another one was the creation of a peer-run drop-in center, which is not only a recommendation in the SMART goals, but it is also a recommendation in HSRI, where we have more peer-delivered services, and this will be the first one in the county where we actually have a peer-run drop-in center. Another one was the expansion of Crisis Mobile. So that is one that is listed as a recommendation as we continue to move forward. Continuing to move forward with the CRS or other psychosocial rehabilitation benefits to be able to broaden the continuum of care. So we've got the community recovery services benefit, and then in 2014 as a budget neutral item, what we'll be able to try to introduce is comprehensive community services, which is a step down from a CSP and a more intensive level of care than targeted case management. So it actually adds two additional levels of care based on acuity, where a client can choose and select a provision of service and also a provider based on what their clinical needs are. Another recommendation was to continue to strengthen targeted case management services. So we will be doing that as a pilot with the Division of Housing and actually expanding targeted case management to a new group, and that is individuals with substance use disorder. And that's basically to really take into consideration the high prevalence of individuals that suffer from both a mental health and a substance use disorder. Another one is the expansion of, you know, additional supported housing units, and that's a big initiative for the Division of Housing that's included within, you know, the budget itself, is that there are more units that are actually planned for 2014. In addition is the expansion and the addition of 14 additional crisis beds. So right now we have 39 crisis stabilization beds in the community, and we will be able to add 14, so that will take it up to 53 beds that we will have in the community as well.
Madam Chair, all these, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Do all these have funding with it?
All except the addition of the new the additional psychosocial rehabilitation benefit, that is a budget neutral item.
So we did fund, so the finance did fund those, all those.
All the rest of those, yes, Supervisor, they did.
Thank you.
Supervisor Weishan.
Thank you for your report today. On your SMART goals accomplishments on that sheet, if you could just explain a few things. We have created the individualized personal centered care plan piece, the 157% increase. Explain how we accomplish that?
Yes, sir, I will. I think one of the things that we recognize, the importance of having a crisis response plan for individuals that come into to PCS or our psychiatric crisis services, and basically the director of crisis services, who is Amy Lorenz, revised the crisis plan and made it a strength-based, person-centered crisis plan, where it involves not only what the individual's desires are if they are in a crisis situation, but also how to be able to involve informal supports and build on the strengths of the individual and what is necessary for the individual to keep them connected to their community so they don't have to utilize PCS or crisis services. And one of the recommendations and one of the things that was also created was not only policies and procedures for the completion of this plan, but permission to allow the individual to sign off and have that crisis plan actually available for anyone who touches that individual as they come in. Sometimes their ability for stabilization is impacted by the crisis situation that they're involved in. And so with the crisis plan on file, it has the desires and the wishes and the goals of the individual as they come in. And I think one of the things just to make mention is that once the crisis plan was revised, it was presented to the state for approval because it has specific criteria that it has to meet in order for crisis plans to be considered allowed to be considered crisis plans. And it was the feedback that was given to Director Lorenz was that it was the best crisis plan that this individual at the state had seen in the entire state of Wisconsin.
Right. We accomplished the increase. I'm glad that we're creating quality plans in that. But did we achieve that by contracting with an outside agency, or did we hire X amount of personnel?
No, sir. That was county staff that was doing that. Yes, I heard your question. It was Director Lorenz and her staff that actually completed those crisis plans.
So we increased threefold just by utilizing our current staff?
Correct, sir.
And then if you slide down just below that with the targeted case management slots, how does that transition that? If we have all these crisis plans out there, how does that work then with targeted case management? Shouldn't I see a larger increase in targeted case management?
Targeted case management is a level of care, and a crisis plan is merely a tool. It is a document that helps an individual once they're in crisis. But what targeted case management does is it provided us an opportunity to budget for more individuals to actually be served in that level of care within the community. So targeted case management is a Medicaid benefit. And basically what the increase in funding allowed us to do was increase our budgeted capacity by 90 additional clients. But what we also did was create a new level of targeted case management, which was recovery case management. And it really was designed for individuals who may be doing quite well in their community and may not need the frequency of weekly visits with their case manager. So they are seen at a minimum of a monthly basis. And a lot of times that is, you know, to basically assess how they're doing in their housing situation and assess, you know, psychiatric stability and symptom management so they can remain in safe and stable housing as well. So we increased by 90 clients, but we also created a new level of care.
How many people do we have on the targeted case management as far as the people who go and check up on people, like you said, whether it's once a week or once a month on that? Because if we have 1,300 people out there utilizing that service, how often, I mean, how many people are overseeing that?
Sure. Back at the community services branch, we have one individual and two supervisors that are specifically dedicated to the oversight and administration of targeted case management. We have nine agencies within the community that are providing that service and probably have over 100 clinicians out in the community. Caseloads are based on a 1 to 25 ratio, except for recovery case management, which is at a 1 to 40 ratio. Every single one of the case managers has a clinical supervisor within their agency that also provides oversight and guidance to the care that the individuals are actually receiving.
So the there'll be a group that there's nobody that gets checked on every day. It's like once a week, or
for targeted case management, it usually is a weekly check-in. For daily check-in and daily services, that's our community support program.
Great. Oh, bless you. When you then, if you just kind of slide over the 90-day readmission, you know, I see that, you know, we've gone down a little bit from 24% to almost 20% there. That's still one in five people coming back through the door. Mm-hmm. What kind of numbers are we talking about? 50, 100, 1,000? What is I just see a percentage. I was just wondering what is a number that goes along with that?
I don't have that number. I don't have the number of patients. Is that?
Madam Chair, Supervisors, it's a difficult, Jim Kubicek, Interim Administrator of the Behavioral Health Division, it's a difficult number to quantify, specifically because you have duplicated and unduplicated counts of individuals. So you might have one individual that's coming back many, many, many times over the course of a year. So that would be that specific person that would account for perhaps 5% of that 20% in terms of the readmission rates. So it's really two numbers. I don't have the cumulative numbers at my disposal right now, but we certainly can get that and provide both the duplicated and on the unduplicated count.
Well, I don't see the difference whether it's sort of like duplicated. It's a readmission that someone
right.
has had an issue and needed to come back.
So we can that would be if the number of readmissions are not is what you're looking for, that would be an unduplicated account. A duplicate account. We can certainly provide that.
All right, sure. Well, I'd like both numbers. Anything you can do to firm. I'd just like to know how many individuals are
sure.
we and what the percentages are attached to.
Yeah,
on that
we can absolutely provide them.
And my last question is just on the housing point, and I think this was touched a little bit. What our total is out there, and I guess what is needed, and I guess how far along the road are we to achieving what we need to have?
The figures are actually based on the 10-year plan that was established by the city and the county task force on homelessness, and we are on target and on track with what the 10-year plan is for recommendations to reduce homelessness within Milwaukee County.
Well, homelessness is a lot broader and different than what on here. Yeah, I'm sure. I was just wondering if you know, are we looking to build 1,000 more units over the next 5 years, or what? You know, if you could address that, what is the need versus where we are right now?
Sure, Madam Chair, Supervisor Washon. Sue is correct. We do kind of look at the 10-year plan and homelessness, and what our goal was to do 1,260 units over 10 years. Now, that is homelessness in general. It doesn't necessarily speak to just the behavioral health division. What we kind of look at as far as what the needs are of BHD consumers is we look at our existing waiting lists for supportive housing. Those lists, you know, we do about 12 different developments. Our waiting lists range from 6 all the way up to 40. So we probably have 150, 200 individuals on our waiting list. So that's kind of what we look at as far as demand goes. So we're going to continue to keep doing supportive housing. The challenge is going to be more of the rental assistance vouchers. Are we going to have enough Section 8 available? Are we going to have enough Shelter Plus Care available? That is going to be more of the challenge to meet the demand going forward.
Well, I'm trying to figure, if Bill Gates walked through the door and said, I will write you a check to build enough housing for everything you need, how big of a price tag are we talking about for the, so how many more units do we need to build, and what is the cost of that construction?
Sure. Madam Chair, Supervisor, it's hard to necessarily say. If you look at the county investments since the housing division was started, the county board supported the housing trust fund. We put in about $3 million of that. But most of the construction is done through low-income housing tax credits. So if you look at the amount of money the county has leveraged, it's well over $100 million that we've leveraged for supportive housing. So it's difficult to say what the investment's going to be needed. It depends if you use tax credits. If you do a scattered site model like we have in the 2014 budget, where we just fund that with county resources, it's hard to say what that price tag would be. But again, the more important issue is I think we can continue to be very successful in getting tax credits, doing gap financing, but it's really that rental subsidy that's going to be more of a challenge. I think we'll continue to be successful raising capital for construction.
Well, I think we have to have a ballpark number, of what we have to invest to create the housing, and then what type of yearly cost it would be to maintain that housing and how we're going to do it. Like you said, it's one thing to build a housing complex for people, but then there's ongoing maintenance to keep that functioning for people.
Sure.
So I'm not quite sure how we, if we want to move, if our goal is to move people into the community, I think our number one thing would be able to put a price tag on that, on the housing piece, and then what it's going to cost to maintain that housing piece and how we're going to do that.
Sure. Madam Chair, Supervisor, I think our best guesstimate is looking at the 10-year plan on homelessness that we cooperated on, which is around 100 units a year that we're trying to do. It's hard to talk about the price tag because each development focuses on a different set of individuals. Whether it's all of Behavioral Health Division consumers is a certain price tag. I guess as a estimate, you could say maybe around $100,000 for a 24 unit building, roughly, if it's all catered to Behavioral Health Division consumers. If it's more of a mixed population building, it would be considerably less than that. It's very hard to give an exact dollar amount. We just try to work with community services branch, work with homeless providers to figure out exactly what the individual needs of consumers is for each development that we do. But 100 units a year is really what we'd love to be able to do, but the subsidies just aren't there right now.
Well,
What is the cost to do those 100 units?
Again, Supervisor, it depends on if tax credits are used or not. Each development ranges from, you know, our 40-unit scattered site development is about $400,000, and that's all county money to do the rental subsidy as well as the case management services. Mm-hmm. Or you could have a building like Bradley Crossing that we did in Brown Deer that the construction cost might be $7, $8 million. I mean, it is such a wide range depending on developments and the source of funds.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two things I want. First, I want to touch on, thank you. What's inpatient quality check? What is that?
Can you repeat the question?
What is inpatient quality check?
Inpatient.
Quality check or qualification check? You mentioned that somehow, and I just want to find out what that about. And the housing can come back by homeless too.
Inpatient
quality check that you said stated. Yeah, inpatient quality check.
We have
the readmission rate.
Oh, the readmission rate.
Mm-hmm. You got a qualification for.
So I'm not sure if I'm going to answer your question or not. I mean, we have a quality improvement, actually a quite robust quality improvement program within all branches of the division. And in terms of quality markers, that is certainly an indication of a strong indication of quality and that the services that are being provided are effective. In terms of that readmission rate, I mean, it's also an indication in terms of the community. I'm not getting it, am I?
No. Okay, we come back to that.
I think his question is, what are you doing as far as quality control for the people that are in the mental health complex? So we've got this robust, you know, quality control and targeted case management for people who are not who are in the community and not in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So his question is, for the people that are in the hospital, is the same type of thing in place?
Madam Chair, that. Supervisors. I'm sorry?
She added that, but I like that anyway.
Okay. So there are... speak for an hour on the different quality indicators that we use, but you don't want to hear me for an hour, on the different quality indicators that we use to demonstrate that the services that are providing on the acute inpatient services are provided in a recovery-based manner that, some of those quality indicators include, and I'll just mention some off the top of my head, that would be our restraint rate, our falls rate, the readmission rate that was described earlier. Some of the quality indicators that we use are what's called the MISIP survey, which is patient interviews that are conducted at discharge. So how do our patients feel about the quality of the service that they were provided? And within that survey, there's a number of different indicators that are referenced. Did they feel like they were able to contribute to their care? Were they treated in a respectful manner? Were they treated with dignity? Those are some examples of some types of questions that are included in the discharge interview that's related specifically on quality. I could go on, but so there's a great many of them that we look at in terms of the provision of quality service on the acute service, on the acute inpatient service.
Thank you. Now, when you Supervisor Washington talking about homelessness, you talk about price tag. You could get $1 billion. You would not touch that, because with 100 units in Milwaukee County alone, just in Milwaukee County, you have over 3,000 people are homeless, and that's from who are families, veterans, people who have mental illness. So I'm happy that this county is looking to help in that population, but we need a lot of help, and we need people from the private sector, not only Milwaukee County, the feds, to step back up to the plate, because just being out there one night, and I want to thank Milwaukee County employees, family care,
BHD, the House of Correction, for when I did the homeless, just put my shoes in their foot. It's very seriously. Mm-hmm. And you need a lot of money. But you can't throw money at something. You need to help figure out how can we help them not to be homeless and how can we help them find a job. So I'm happy that we have something, but you talking about a drop in the bucket. You're talking about hopefully in 10 years you have 100 units and you still going to have people continue to be homeless for whatever circumstance they have.
Sure.
So you could take a billion, 3 million, billion, or even $1 trillion. You still got to figure out what's the root cause of why are they homeless.
Sure.
Madam Chair, Supervisor, just to respond to that, I think you bring up two really good points. If you look at the way that we finance the majority of the developments that we partner on, you're looking at 10, 11 different sources of financing. The county is just a small portion of that. We really need a lot of private sector help. That's exactly the case when you look at what we call it's lasagna financing. It's these layers and layers of financing, and we do need an awful lot of help. The biggest thing from the federal government point of view, again, is the rental subsidies that I keep bringing up. Once we hit our Section 8 cap of 20% for project basing, that's all we can do.
Right.
So unless we do get more money from the federal government for more Section 8 vouchers, potentially more shelter plus care vouchers, that's really going to be the challenge more than anything else. And the other thing that you brought up that's really important is as far as prevention. And getting to folks before they get homeless. One of the things we're seeing huge dividends with is the community intervention specialist position that was created through the redesign. What that position does is we're going into the House of Correction, we're going into jail, we're going into private hospitals and assisting with discharge planning into housing directly from those institutions, whereas before individuals might end up directly in shelters.
Right.
We're seeing quite a big difference in doing that. It's something that we've never been involved with before. So maybe I can give the board an update once that position gets a little more down the road, but we're seeing some really good results on that.
Thank you.
Supervisor Stemper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Thank you to the task force for all your hard work and all your due diligence. Now, first, let me ask you about the task force and the volunteers and the commitment they are making. What's the morale? How's everybody feeling?
I would say that, by and large, people are still committed. We've had some turnover. I think one of the challenges that we faced is to keep people motivated. Our action teams filled. I think we've had different areas that we've been able to draw from to do that, but it's an ongoing process.
Okay. So they're staying committed as much as possible. Okay. All right. Well, that's good. So let's see here. The 6-month time frame for this first assessment for these first 8 goals. When did that start? And when was the end of the 6 month? Was it this week or?
And once they were adopted, were in March of this year, 2013, mm-hmm. And the data that you're seeing is a point in time capture at the end of September, also of 2013. So it's a 6 month or a half year since the goals were adopted.
Okay, and just these 8 or 9 were the ones that were able to be completed thus far.
Since September. There are other goals that have been accomplished that we will report back on in March when we have the annual report, but other goals have been accomplished as well.
Okay. In accomplishing these goals, so they're accomplished, so now what? So once they're accomplished, are we going to, you know, we're going to maintain? It's only been 6 months, so the goals are already accomplished. So now what happens? Are we going to reach a new goal or try to satisfy the other goals? Or what's next?
We're not done. There are 16
right.
goals, so I think that's one thing. But I think we're all cognizant that this is an issue of continuous quality improvement as
mm-hmm.
well. So, I mean, redesign just doesn't stop when the 16 SMART goals are accomplished. We have to continually look at improving the quality of care in our system and other areas that we need to improve on. And how do we continue the effort once the SMART goals have been accomplished?
Okay. And last week there was a cultural intelligence training. how did that go, first of all? And since these 8 goals are completed, how is cultural intelligence going to be incorporated into the 8 goals that have been completed? I know you said we're going to maintain it, but we still have to include that portion. So how is that going to include from the 8 and moving forward with the rest of the goals?
That's a very good question, Supervisor. And I'm the staff support to the Cultural Intelligence Action Team. That was one of the last action teams that was actually formed, and that action team was formed in May of this year. And so they had a little bit of a later start, but they have one of the things that they're still in the process of doing is creating their strategic plan. So they have come through with a variety of different recommendations. The training that has been received has been, received via a couple different venues. One was through SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, on just cultural intelligence and human service delivery system. And then there's another training that's being provided by the SBM Consultation Group. And basically what that is going to a variety of different provider agencies and ensuring that, their practices are really meeting the standards of what cultural intelligence has been established by the federal definitions that have been adopted. But I know part of the discussion has been then how do we take that one step further and look at contracts and look at, RFPs that the county is letting, and then actually what are we doing to ensuring that the treatment programming, really does align with what cultural practices are to ensure that someone has a level of comfort with where services are being delivered and how services are being delivered as well.
Okay. So who received the training and who's still left to receive the training? Was it offered to everyone?
The first training that was offered in August was offered to everyone, and it was also offered to peer specialists as well. So it was offered to both, formal treatment agencies, any member of the task force, and any certified peer specialist that wanted to attend the training. The training that's occurring right now are through a variety of different groups that co-chairs of that action team are actually targeting specific entities to receive training, and then other entities have contacted them and said, can I get that training? So that's a little bit outside of kind of the mental health redesign, but, there is a list of entities that they have established that they want to be trained, and they are just starting on that list right now. So some of it has been providers, but there have been outside community agencies that have requested that training as well.
Okay. And what's the agency that's doing the training again?
SBM Group. It was the gentleman that was at the last task force meeting that presented to us.
Right. Okay. And was it how do you rate the training?
Oh, it was very well received, and I mean, he comes highly credentialed as well.
Okay. All right. So the emergency detentions, I know our goal is to reduce the number, but what's our target goal, and what's a standard or an acceptable number of emergency detentions that are
that's a hard question to answer as far as a standard for emergency detentions, but I think...
What does
HSRI
say? Yeah.
It says continue to reduce them, emergency detentions and involuntary, and I think what we're trying to do is increase the number of voluntary admissions to the hospital instead of involuntary, so that number is actually going up, and that's really the indicator that we're trying to look at, that people actually say, this is a service that I need. I mean, we will always need inpatient care.
Mm-hmm.
We will always need inpatient care. It's just the venue and mechanism for how an individual gets connected to that level of service.
Yeah, and I know last year we were the highest in the state, Milwaukee County. So where are we in relation to that now, our improvement? Are we still the highest, or are we?
Other counties? I don't know where we are in comparison to other counties, but we can get that information. For
okay.
Okay. The other thing you have to consider is we are the largest county in the state. So.
Oh, absolutely. But
yeah, by far we're the highest in the state. And, something to consider when we look at the total quantity of emergency detentions is the method that number gets reported from county to county. The number we report is the gross number, or the number that the total number that gets written regardless of disposition. Other counties report those that go to probable cause. For us, that number is significantly reduced in comparison to the total number. We have, let's say, I believe we're on track for about 7,200
mm-hmm.
For this year, and approximately 2,000 of those end up in a probable cause hearing. So it's just important when we talk about number of emergency detentions to compare apples to apples.
Right. So the 19%, is that a decent number?
Actually, that's nearly double what the target was.
Okay.
The target is reflected in SMART goal number 8, and it says the number of emergency detentions will decrease by 10%, 720, from the baseline of 7,200. And actually, it was, we're on target to go down 19%. So
all right.
The target was 10%. We're on track to go down by 19%.
Good job. Good job. Okay. Well, just two more. The construction for the supportive housing, what's our target for 2014? It's kind of like what Supervisor Weishaum was alluding to, but what's our target for construction in 2014?
Sure. Madam Chair, Supervisor, I believe through the mental health redesign, our goal was 25 units, and we're going to surpass that by quite a few units.
Okay.
So we have the 40 units that will be in front of you today for scattered site housing. We also have 40 units of scattered site.
Our goal was 25. The budget
the goal was 25.
Okay.
But we also have some units. We had some funds set aside that were RFP'd to do supportive housing for individuals aging out of foster care. Again, when we talk about prevention, we're trying to get to people as young as possible. There's a huge need for housing for people in our wraparound program. So we have a minimum of 8 units there. But I believe through that project, we will have a lot more than that in 2014.
Okay.
There's also our foreclosure initiative that we're looking at doing in 2014 that we can do supportive housing units for. So the goal was 25, but we've kind of already beat that, but we'll try
as
many as
possible. How much of that is new construction?
Of the
25.
Of the total?
Yeah.
Probably none of it.
Okay.
Again, it's very difficult to get tax credits now in this environment. You're generally going to get one supportive housing deal through WEDA, so we have to be very creative. If we're going to continue to meet our goal, it's going to have to be through, like, the scattered site initiative, just different things that maybe we haven't done before, just in case tax credits don't come every year.
Okay, since you brought up the foreclosure initiative, did you bring that and add that part of the resolution in economic development?
Yes.
Okay, okay. Yep. So they are aware of the Milwaukee County portion, and the program consists of providing, you're getting this benefit based on providing services for Milwaukee County residents.
Correct. It went in front of ECD on Monday.
Okay. I don't know if they understood. Well, Supervisor, I was talking. I don't know if you understood that. Okay. Now, ten to 11 different sources of finances other than state and the federal. You mentioned there's 10 to 11 different sources of finance other than the state, federal, and the county. So who else is there?
Sure, Madam Chair, Supervisor Stamper. As an example, a typical development would be 80 to 90% maybe low-income housing tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
But then typically we've had county housing trust fund dollars. We've had city housing trust fund dollars. Various local grants. Some of the developers also carry a small first mortgage that they sometimes get through nonprofit type lenders. So by the time you break down all of these sources of financing, they can get up to 10 or 11.
Okay. And then, Sue, do you know where we are with the public hearings and the consumers and providers attending a public listening session? I know Peggy and I are the first two supervisors to host it.
I don't believe any have been scheduled yet. That is
mm-hmm.
one of the charges of goal number 2 and SMART goal number 1, but then
mm-hmm.
also there's a work group number 2. None have been scheduled yet. I think they're still working on what the presentation curriculum will actually
right.
look like as it continues to move forward, but I believe your district is the first one that
right.
is
supposed who do to I contact? Scheduled. I don't remember who I was in.
Tanya Simpson is
Tanya the
liaison
the person.
For that.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then Mr. Carlson and Sue, as far as keeping the task force motivated and people committed, how can we assist?
I think one of the things that people really appreciate is when you come and
mm-hmm.
if anybody else could join for a meeting. I think that's really motivating to people to know that people are really paying attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing that's very motivating is that we've, really been able to get our some of our accomplishments down on paper. We had a very unfortunate loss of one of our team members, Henry Kunath, who passed away very suddenly, and he was really our data guru, and that kind of slowed us down. And I think now that we've got the data out there, we've got things that we're able to track and we're able to show the success that we've had, I think that's been very motivating as well.
Okay. So, you know, each individual organization or provider that sends a member to the task force, I know you mentioned that it was volunteer, but do they get some type of credit or compensation for being part of the redesign team, or is all
this is all strictly volunteer? I mean, many people have a relationship and have worked with the county over the years, but you know, I just take myself for example. If I spend an entire afternoon dealing with the redesign project, I'm up till 11 o'clock at night doing the things that I didn't do, you know, for my other responsibilities at
work. Okay. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any further comments or questions from committee? Supervisor Bowen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, I'll try to speed up. Can you explain the asterisk at the bottom excludes 426 tenant-based shelter plus care units?
Sure. Madam Chair, Supervisor Bowen, what that is you know, again, the Housing Division was created in 2008 really to focus on this issue of permanent supportive housing. The county had always operated our scattered site tenant-based shelter plus care program. So we kind of did an asterisk to keep that number separate. That program was always in existence. It's not project-based. It's the program the county's run for many, many years. So that is just a separate number. So that program continues to be in existence.
And then second, about emergency detentions and the voluntary versus involuntary number, do we know that what that looks like?
We do have it. Supervisor, I'm sorry I don't have that figure with you, but I can get it to Jody and have it distributed. But we do have the number of involuntary admissions and where we're actually at with that.
And that, again, that's another indicator, as Sue mentioned, of positive progression. We want to see there's going to be numbers of folks that are coming to the ER. We want to see that number getting closer to 50-50. And there's been a significant progression in terms of the percentage of voluntaries increasing over the last 3 years. And we'll certainly provide that, and we can send that graphic display out to the members of the committee.
Gotcha. And lastly, just looking at the sheet, you guys are doing a lot of good work, and I think that needs to be acknowledged. A lot of what we see in the media, though, doesn't portray that. Is there things that are going on at in BHD or in these different services that are changing how the mental health system works that we're not highlighting on this sheet, especially some of the negative things that the community always sees in the media?
Absolutely. There's a tremendous amount. I mean, the sheet itself is basically the six-month progress of what's been completed based on the establishment of the SMART goals. And that is why we actually want to publish our data to our website and have that information via the dashboard published on a quarterly basis, because, I mean, there is some misrepresentation of the progress that's actually being made. And I think it's disheartening and it's unfortunate, because I can tell you that everyone who's connected with the Redesign Task Force is impacted by, you know, the information, the lack, and the misinformation that's out there. There is a tremendous amount of work that's going, but I think more so than anything, promoting the negativity only perpetuates the stigma of mental illness. And I think that's the issue that we really and truly all need to address, is that, as I had mentioned, the clients that we serve are so much more than their disease. And the thing that we have to keep focused on is that they are human beings, and it is our responsibility to separate the person from the disease. And, you know, they have as many aspirations and dreams and desires as we do, and we want to be able to provide those opportunities for anyone who walks through any of our doors, whether it's at Aurora or whether it's at BHD. It is our desire to give them every wish that they want in their life.
Very well. In the last budget, and I just want to capitalize on Supervisor Mayo's question. In the 2014 budget, is there anything else that the county board did not support to support the redesign and to change the system of mental health?
We are incredibly grateful for the support that we've received from you, and we can only say thank you.
Got you. All right. And lastly, Director, are you working with the county executive's lobbyist to lobby in Madison to take away control of the mental health system from the county?
No, I'm not. I'm not aware of any specific efforts going on that regard.
Gotcha. I think that's just important to have for public record. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Stemper?
Yes. Real quick, before I'd like to make a motion to move in place, it's on file. Good report. Hey, Sue, did you want to update the committee on how you were able to fund that new project that was in the budget that the board didn't support wholly, but then you were able to get the 50 slots?
It was restored.
Okay.
Those monies were actually restored. And basically, this is the partnership that we're talking about with the Division of Housing to be able to provide damp housing and targeted case management opportunities to individuals that have an exclusive substance use disorder. It's really in response to area of housing where there's a deficiency within Wiser Choice, which is our substance abuse service delivery system. And, you know, we actually want to continue and begin to work with providers to offer that benefit as soon as possible. We probably will do it at a reduced caseload at probably 1 to 20. And, you know, just try and take a look and work out the bugs until we can go to full implementation with that as well.
Whose department is that under? Who's supervisor? You're supervising that? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Great. And Director Colon, does Ms. Simpson in her newsletters, does she report the positive things that are happening over at BHD?
Absolutely.
I didn't read that. She does.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Supervisor Stamper, absolutely.
Does she have this in here?
Yes.
Okay.
And we're going to be sending out, we're putting together our annual report right now, and it's pretty impressive the amazing results we've been producing for people that we serve, and each of the divisions have done a tremendous job. So we'll be sharing that information in our annual report coming up in January.
Okay, thanks.
And we also have a newsletter coming out this week.
All right, cool. So I'd like to move in place this on file, Madam Chair.
Okay. We have a motion to receive and place on file. Is there any further comments or questions from committee? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call the roll on that motion.
Stamper.
Aye.
Mayo.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Weishaupt.
Aye.
Bowen.
Aye.
Taylor.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to receive and place this item on file is approved.
Thank you very much.